It's 1:52 a.m. in spooky Washington, D.C., and you're listening to Night Call.
Hello, welcome to Night Call, your podcast for those strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am in New York, and with me on the other line in Los Angeles are
Tess Lynch and
Molly Lambert.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hello. We have a very lady horror-oriented podcast for you today, starting off with the first lady, one might call her. The very first lady, Melania Trump, which, as of this recording, there's a lot of conspiracies around her, and it's been a while since we've had a good White House well, no, that's not true.
Yeah, come on.
I was going to say, no, this is the best time for conspiracy theories and the worst time for everything else.
I guess non-political ones, but there hasn't been a good first lady conspiracy theory in a second. She may have resurfaced as by the time you hear this, but I think yesterday they announced that she wouldn't be going to the G7 summit. There was some statement issued about how she has just not been appearing anywhere because she's deciding to focus on her kids and family, which is there have been similar statements like that in the past. But
she's got to be best.
She's just being best wherever she is. She's being best.
But I like Audrey Woolen, a good follow on Twitter, was talking about how this is sort of it feels like a kind of gothic mystery that's evolving around Melania being gradually like turned into a ghost and sent up to inhabit the rafters of some unknown attic in the White House.
Well, it's funny too because Ira Madison has also been doing these really funny threads on Twitter about sort of like the soap opera version of what has happened to Melania. He's like, oh, she's been replaced with a body double. Mm-hmm. And then the body double's been sent to like a farm or something. Just like very Days of Our Lives, what it would be, which would be that like someone has a secret twin.
Yeah, the secret. And she's in a coma.
Yeah. There's been a double rumor going around for a while. I think because there were some photos of her where her face was mostly covered by sunglasses or like her hair or something. Like she's just styled in a way where you purposefully can't seem to make out her face. So who knows who that could be?
I think it was this one video where she's wearing a hat and glasses and it just looks like a prosthetic face. I just looked at the Snopes on this and they were like, no, it was a distortion. Like it was like a screen distortion.
Is she the hat man?
I think she's Carmen Sandiego.
She is.
She's like in a trench.
It's so close.
I gotta say, this is one of those ones where I was like, who cares? I don't care.
Why don't you care?
Because
it's so
there's
weird.
So much other shit
there's
happening
a lot of
that's
other
actually
shit.
Important, and this just seems like a distraction almost.
That's true, but it's an interesting distraction. If you acknowledge that it's a distraction.
It's interesting, but I'm also like, having made the mistake of watching cable news for the first time in a while, I was just like, this is what, like if you turn on cable news, all it is all day is like, it's
they're not talking
like,
about Puerto Rico. They're not talking
no,
about anything.
They're not talking
of,
about anything real. All they're talking about is like Roseanne and Melania and like Russia. And none of it is ever real. And I've heard that it's like they're getting really good ratings for it because it's become just like Fox News for neoliberals where it's like, I'm going to watch TV all day. And then like something's going to break in the Russia scandal that'll like crack this whole thing open. And so it like gets people addicted to watching this sort of meaningless news programming.
Well, this is the great prank that this administration has actually played on people on the left is that it has made like raving, paranoid, Fox News-esque lunatics out of all of us. Which is,
it's definitely been a thing where you see some people just like go off the deep end never to return.
Oh, yeah.
It's become just more and more of a thing, and some people just turn into these like Russia conspiracists where it's like, hey, it's not like they're not gonna be like whoops like Mulligan.
But you know? and the plus side is we all learned a lot about game theory. And
so much about game theory. I don't think 12-dimensional chess is real, you guys.
It's so funny because I was remembering like maybe a year ago or something meeting up with a friend of David somewhere, and he was like, did you hear, like we hadn't looked at the news maybe for a day or something, and he was like, did you hear like the indictments, they're coming down. Like, everybody's going to jail.
People have been saying that every day.
Yeah.
And
but we're like, really? Really? And we like searched Twitter. We couldn't figure out what he was talking about. And of course, it was like a Louise Mensch thread, probably.
Yeah. But like, people, there's always somebody that's like, you know, my inside source said, like, mm-hmm. Mueller's prepared the report. And like, Trump's been president for like over a year.
You mean 80 years?
Like 150, yeah.
Yeah. Like 150 years. He's going to get reelected.
No, Molly.
Yeah, he is. Because what have we changed about anything? We haven't like fixed how voting is fucked up.
Can that be like a rallying cry, not a prediction? Can that be like, he will be reelected unless...
I don't think there's an unless. I think he's going to get reelected because I think that the people that are like, Russia did this. It's like, no, like American racism did this.
It could be both.
It could
I
be
think
both,
it could be
like,
both. I think it's possible for it to be both.
But you can't bait people with like racist Facebook memes that aren't already like prone to racism
right.
that are going to believe them. If they're not racist, they're going to be like, that's bullshit. And clearly there are a lot of people that are primed to believe all this garbage, but they also believe it. Mm-hmm. So I don't think those people don't exist. I think they voted him in, not Russia.
Well, do you think it's possible for him to disappoint those people in a meaningful way where
no,
they'll go to
no.
some third party and...
No. I think it's like Kanye. I think it's like the people that have drank the Kool-Aid are like, I drank all the Kool-Aid and I'm not going to stop now. You know, like to stop would be to denounce everything that I've done in my entire life until now. So like, got to just keep rolling with it.
Hey, night callers. You know, Tess and Molly and I often talk about how we all wish that we could just be brains in a jar sometimes. But the truth about life is that you have a body and sometimes you have to do annoying things like go to yoga class or really fulfilling things or go running or, you know, whatever the case may be and take care of that sack of bones that you live in. So Fabletics.com is a great resource for making sure that you always have something comfortable and fresh and fun to wear when you're working out. It was started by Kate Hudson. Yes, that Kate Hudson. And it's premium activewear at a great value. If you do a lot of working out or yoga or whatever, you know that you can spend a lot of money on leggings, on activewear, and all of this stuff is really affordable, but the quality is still really, really high. Fabletics clothes are designed to move with you through your lightest workouts and your most intense. And they're also just comfortable clothes to wear around when you're doing errands and lounging around the house. I know that I do a lot of my best writing wearing Fabletics pants. The leggings are available in sizes extra, extra small to 3X and in petite, regular, and tall lengths. So no matter what, there's going to be a look that fits you. And every month they renew their looks. So you can go on the site, browse around, and find something new that looks great on you. You can shop as a guest or become a VIP, and that way you'll receive 40 to 50% off retail prices of everything on the site, which is the best way to shop. So go to fabletics.com/call now to get two pairs of their amazing leggings for just $24. Seriously, these are the world's best leggings. They are so comfortable, and once you try them, you will fall in love with them. It's a $99 value, and you're going to get two pairs for only $24 when you join at fabletics.com/call. That is fabletics.com/call. Can I just put this out there also as a sidebar right now that we're not going to talk about the Kanye album?
We don't have to. I mean, it's trash. That's what we can say about it.
I haven't even
it.
Listened
it
to it yet. It's one of these things I've decided I don't have time for at this point
well,
in my life
I'm
right
saying.
Now.
It's like, I think it's okay to be like, I don't have time for this at this point in my life.
Because, it's not even like a Kanye is trash thing. It's just like, I simply do not have the bandwidth to get into like figuring out how I feel about the new Kanye album. I'm not even...
I think it's perfectly fine to say that in light of what's going on with Kanye, that you're just sitting this one out. Like, I'm, yeah. I don't plan to listen to it. Maybe I will, but I mean, and honestly, we've talked about this before. There's something that's so sad and feels predatory at some point about like feeling this responsibility of having an opinion on what's going on with Kanye when he's very clearly in a place where he should just kind of go away for a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think I brought this up before, but Jay King had a good thread. Jay King, the intellectual dark web of the left NBA Twitter superstar, was talking about just like, I don't know, like, yeah, we don't have to care about this stuff. He was like, anyone who ever wrote a think piece about Kanye is responsible for this world we've made.
Yeah.
He was like, we all graduated from college with no skills except being able to like write pop culture theory.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe he's not wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe speculating about celebrity is bad, and projecting things onto people that aren't there
or
is
treating
not
people's
real.
Careers and lives by extension as a sport that you watch and prognosticate about is maybe not helping.
Well, we talked on Girls in Hoodies a lot about like monarch mind control, like the kind of conspiracies about what happened to young stars, mm-hmm. and they all had these nervous breakdowns and stuff. And I mean, a lot of it was supposedly like a machine that was kind of conditioning them to be these like ciphers, but a lot of it was just growing up feeling that, you know, creating attention around oneself was the ticket, and then coming to like a point in your life and your career where you kind of feel like you have to like step it up and step it up.
Yeah.
And it just leads to such sad things, and then you just don't want to like have any of that on your hands.
I was going to say also there is a machine, and the machine is capitalism.
Oh, there we go.
No, you know what though? There was this post about Avicii that was really sad on ONTD where people were talking about like, hey, this guy kept saying like, if I keep doing this, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And everybody around him was like, you have to keep doing it because you're making all these people money.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. And then all these people were, you know, they were kind of like, hey, it kind of seems like this is a pattern that happens to like every big star we make that has a nervous breakdown is like, they should take time off and they can't, you know?
Yeah. I think a problem with that too is that when an artist expresses vulnerability, it almost seems as though it's an invitation for fans to come closer when really it might be their attempt at stepping back. Right. So I think that with Kanye, when he would be on these tweet binges and expressing very personal sentiments and like really controversial opinions, it almost seemed as though he was inviting people to relate to him more or to like try to figure out what was going on with him in a way that was really invasive.
Yeah.
But it maybe wasn't that.
You can see the reaction. I mean, I said, I know we said we weren't going to talk about this. But you can see in the reactions, it's like, it's not even about Kanye or the album. And I feel like the same thing is going on with like the Pusha T and Drake fight, where it's like, it's about people's personal investment in those artists. And a lot of it has to do with nostalgia for like, that, you know,
any time other than now.
Yeah, just like something that mattered to you at a different point, and if you no longer connect to that thing, then like everything you ever did was a lie. But it's like, no, if you no longer connect to that thing, it's because there's nothing to connect to anymore. I have always like joked about Kanye like becoming just like full psycho, but it's not funny. It's a bad album because there's no humor to it. It just feels like sad. And you're like, somebody, like, he should just take time off. He should get help.
Yeah.
I would rather he get help than, like, keep making music that
is bad.
Is bad. Or just even keep making music that is good, even. It's like there are things more important than making art or money.
Well, I was just going to say, I just feel like we're just starting to begin to realize the ramifications of, like, this gray area where the thing we use to communicate is also just like culture, like as like it is like the matter of culture. So like somebody's tweet or something about their well-being or their inner life, it's not just a mode of communication. It then becomes a piece of culture to mull over and that can, you know, either make somebody money or affect their career or result in fewer tickets sold for a tour or, you know, whatever. And I feel like we're just starting to realize what happens when, like, you can no longer just talk anywhere, that everything becomes something that comes back to your bottom line.
Yeah, or that, like, you can say things that can, like, fuck up anything else you've said that was good. Like, if you didn't get off the Kanye train at slavery was a choice, mm-hmm. then like yeah. I can't help you because yeah. like what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, like
what? What are you waiting for exactly?
It's a lot. I mean, it is a lot like Trump. It's like the people who are still like, no, he's playing 12-dimensional chess. This is all like a big performance art thing, and he's going to do a big reveal at the like, you know, listening party, and then it's like, no.
You know who knows a lot about performance art? Kanye West fans.
Well, no, that was like one of the conspiracies was that like he was recreating this piece of art by this like famous like Fluxus artist yeah. or something. And yeah. I was like, how delusional do you have yeah. to be to think that that's true? And right. it's like as delusional as people who are like, Trump's, you know, the indictments are coming down any second now. It's like you believe what you want to believe. Yeah. But some, I don't know, people were talking about Britney too. They were just like, everyone around her failed her because like she could have gone a different way if people hadn't been so like, you have to get back on that stage.
Right.
I think everybody, I don't know, my only hope for the future is that like everybody starts taking care of each other instead of being tweet crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, like, going back to the Melania thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bring it back.
Sorry, guys. What's interesting is that we're recording this podcast. Melania is supposed to be appearing before a group of people with no press allowed at, I think, 2:30 Pacific. So 5:30 this evening.
Okay.
So we don't know if that's going to happen. Regardless of if it happens or not, the press isn't allowed, so we'll be relying on reports of people who are in the room.
The real Schrodinger's cat situation.
Exactly. That's, yeah. And there was a CNBC reporter, I think, who said that he saw her. I guess her last appearance was May 10th, and he said he saw her in the White House at some point after that, but wouldn't really elaborate, said other people saw her too. So I think, you know, Molly and I were talking about this just before we started recording, and, you know, she was like, it's just a distraction. And it totally is a distraction. Yeah. I mean, it just seems like that has to be the case. That's well, like,
I'm also like, hey, the Trump administration is disappearing a lot of women mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. we aren't talking about all the time in the news that like I would rather be focusing on.
Well, yeah. I just think, but it becomes an interesting part of the story if you think about them concocting this particular distraction. It shouldn't be something that takes up your time as much as you know, Puerto Rico obviously being something that's just been completely ignored.
I just feel like too with Melania, it's like there seems to be this desire people have to like project humanity onto her or to be like, she's trapped in this horrible situation. It's like,
do people
still put herself in this situation? I don't know. I feel like a lot of like white women are like always like, poor Melania. And
well,
I'm like, no, not poor Melania. She's like married to a white supremacist. She said crazy birther things. Like she's a bad person.
I totally agree. However, it becomes a little bit tricky, I think, when people start like slamming her use of English and stuff like, I mean, attacking her for things not based completely on her personality and life choices that have led her to the White House.
No, and like, I don't know. I just feel like it doesn't matter and she's probably fine.
The thing about all the weird shit around this administration, so like Melania having a body double, that's actually something that feels like in the realm of possibility. I don't think it matters,
for sure.
But there's the actual matter and substance of this administration, which is all the ways in which they're fucking over immigrants and all this other stuff. But then there's like the color of it. Like that it wasn't just that people were having their human rights violated. It was that we were living in this weird twilight zone where it was possible that there was like a body double for the first lady. That's like just bizarre.
No, it goes also to the idea of like people seeing memes that are like clearly photoshopped and not knowing that they're photoshopped. Mm-hmm. Like there is this way and just like you literally can't trust anything you see, especially if you see it on the internet, even if it's video. It's like, no, it could just be all shopped. Like anything can be shopped into the thing that they want you to think it is. And so it makes everybody feel crazy.
Oh, speaking of crazy people on the, there you go.
Perfect.
Speaking of women locked in a tower of their own devising, we were going to talk about Julia Allison, a person who was on the internet a lot and then kind of disappeared off the internet and then reemerged like a butterfly, like a person wearing butterfly wings at Burning Man this week with an editorial in Page Six.
New York Post.
New York Post about how Sex and the City ruined her life.
It's such a college paper essay. Like, it's like, what's your thesis? And give me, you know, in this case, like 25 things that support this thesis, and completely ignoring anything else that might be going on in the world or with yourself at a given time. It's just like a blindingly unself-aware piece of writing. But
it was really rough.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
I think the worst part is when she claimed that a man was attempting to sexually assault her, and it was horrible, but then ended the paragraph with, and the worst part, he flew me back home on JetBlue.
Yeah, I mean, what I thought was a huge bummer about this was that it was like, it wasn't that she regretted trying to sell herself. It was that it didn't work the way she wanted it to, which is, I think, a thing a lot of people actually can identify with, is that you're like, I'm going to be a brand. And then you're like, wait, I'm a cheap brand.
Right. I think there's a lot of assumption that, like, we all bought into the myth of Carrie Bradshaw, right? And it's like, you know what? I didn't. Like, I know you guys like Sex and the City a lot, but I was never a Sex and the City fan, aside from, like, if, like, I was in a hotel and I had to watch a couple episodes. But, like,
it's not that we bought into, like, buying a lot of shit will make you happy. It's that I was like, it would be nice to have a column.
Right. Yeah.
That was where I came to it at.
We were never, I don't think Molly or I were ever huge Sex and the City fans. I think it was almost like our soap opera.
Right.
It also, like, started when we were teenagers, so I feel like it was just, like, maybe if I had been, like, an adult woman in that world already, I would have been like, this is so fate, like, nothing like it. Right. But because I was, like, a teenager, I was like, yeah, sure, I'd like to have a column and an apartment. Like, that sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, there's something, though, like, in the article, like, they've chosen intentionally extremely unflattering photos of her during the height of her career and being like a Gawker fixture and all of that.
But it also makes you be like, oh, the 2000s, which I keep thinking about, like, the 2000s were like Weimar Germany. Mm-hmm. You know, we were all just like carefree, and everybody
is
was just like,
is that how,
like,
you feel about the 2000s? I thought you hated the
2000s. Yeah, 100%. I do hate them, but now I've been thinking about it a lot, where I'm like, oh, everything was so frivolous because fascism was coming.
But there's something about those outfits and the color and how everything was just like neon and like made for the lowest attention span possible. And it really kind of sent a chill down my spine.
Right. But it also just seems like such a different time when it's like, oh, remember when nothing really mattered? Like, the things weren't real.
Well, it's also such a waste when you think about it, because you're like, we had Gawker, but they spent all this time talking about Julia Allison.
But you know what? I was like, she was one of the people they tried to turn into a micro celebrity, but the other one was Mark Zuckerberg, and like that turned out to be like a person that you did want to be paying attention to more than he wanted you to, because you know, people who want all the perks of like power but don't want the downsides, which is the constant analysis, it's like, no, you get both. That's the thing about Elon Musk too. You're like, if you're gonna be on the internet all the time tweeting your opinions, people are going to tell you their opinions back. It's not a one-way thing. That's not how it works. And that's why all these billionaires keep buying publications and shutting down newspapers or making them into sort of censored versions of those papers, because they're like, you can write about anything you want except me. You know, even people that are like, oh, Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post. It's like, yeah, that means you can't like criticize Jeff Bezos the way that you need to for being like a psychotic monomaniac. Like, those people shouldn't be in charge of anything. And Gawker, when it was good, was like, did make you feel like it was like the little guy taking shots at the big guys,
taking some wind out of the sails or something. I mean, I remember reading about Julia Allison just because I read Gawker all the time. I never really cared that much. I mean, even though I read everything about her, like, I did not understand how it applied to me or why I should care. I think because I was in Los Angeles and like wasn't in the media and just didn't really, I was like, who is this woman again?
No, I mean, it was like, she couldn't see how clueless she came off all the time. And so, you know, they're like, and even in this essay, you're like, she starts out by being like, I lived the most glamorous life. I met everyone like Henry Kissinger.
She's like Henry Kissinger and Richard Branson. Those are her two examples, like, for glamorous celebrity.
Glamorous, multi-murdering war criminal. And member of the International Olympic Committee.
Yeah.
Henry Kissinger. Yeah. And then she did the thing that all the most annoying New Yorkers do, which is to move to California and be like, guys, I'm so different now. Like, people who go to summer camp and come back and are like, I have a new personality. Forget everything you knew about me before.
I have a Bravo pilot.
And then she really just kind of shows herself by being like, also, I dated a woman. Carrie Bradshaw would never do that.
That was incredible.
And then she was like, and then I dated a man, but he wanted to be polyamorous. And I was like, oh, honey, you live in Silicon Valley. For sure.
Yep.
I said that in a Samantha voice.
Oh, honey.
Honey, those Silicon Valley guys all want to be polyamorous. I say, not unless they're poly bank accounts. Sorry.
Where's our misadvised?
That was the thing, too. I was like, oh, I forgot she actually did have a reality show at the end. But she was like, but I was over it. So, like, goodbye. But then at the end, she says this thing where she's like, and now I'm 38. And if I hadn't done all this stuff, I'd be married with kids. And you're like, where do you get that idea?
Right. Excuse me? A quality night's sleep helps you recover from distractions faster, make better decisions, improve your memory, prevent burnout, and overall you make fewer mistakes. It's not marketing, it's science. To design a better mattress, Lisa leveraged 30 plus years of experience and hundreds of hours of testing, science, to develop the perfect mattress for all body shapes and sleeping styles. Lisa's mission is to provide a better night's sleep for everybody. Through their 110 program, they donate one mattress for every 10 they sell. That's more than 26,000 mattresses and counting. Lisa strives to leave the world better than they found it, but that doesn't stop with mattress donations. Together with the Arbor Day Foundation, Lisa plants one tree for every mattress they sell and are committed to planting 1 million trees by 2025. Don't miss these summer savings. Get $130 off your Lisa mattress at lisa.com/nightcall. That's $130 off your Lisa mattress at lisa.com/nightcall.
Maybe this is just everybody once they hit like a certain age where you're like, what if I'd done everything differently and been the opposite person of who I am? And I feel like Julia Allison is like, I should have just like stayed in Chicago and married a rich banker. And I feel like she wrote a thing once about how she had like a boyfriend that she like dumped to go do New York stuff. And maybe she just regretted it.
The fact that you remember that is terrifying to me.
Because I followed her narrative for a long time because it was like mildly engaging. And
I felt really bad for her because I used to read this horrible website.
Oh, I read that website. Yeah. I know what you're about to say. The one that was just like a mean Tumblr about her.
No, there was the mean Tumblr just about her. And then there was the mean blog about everybody, but mostly just women who wrote for the internet. And they just, I mean, they gave her a name. I think they called her Donkey. It was just really rough. God. Like, it was the kind of thing where you wondered what a person who feels like they've decided that they're going to have a career that's just based around their personality and kind of banking on that. What do you do if it seems as though the overwhelming response to your brand is negative?
Yeah.
Right. What if you don't have it and that's why you can't be an it girl?
But you maybe also don't have any other its where it's like that might be something that someone else, if you were a completely different person leading a completely different life and making different choices, like she was like charming. Ish at a point maybe, or just you felt like
sympathy you know what? I just remember I'm having so many weird flashbacks now to like specific 2000. Do you remember when she started dating a guy who was like
prom king?
She started dating a nerd, like internet guy.
When she was at Wire,
who was like a wannabe Silicon Valley guy, and so they started a blog together about their relationship called Jacob and Julia.
I read that. Oh no.
And I knew it was doomed because she started like, and this is the thing I see other people do, and I'm always like, again, Samantha voice, I'm always like, oh honey, no, like that's not gonna do anything good for you. Like they would put their fights on the internet and be like, who's right? And I was like, that's not a relationship. That's like, you're asking the internet who's right. Like, you're doomed, you know? Like, even if you're right, like, your relationship is fucked.
Yeah. That's that creepy, pseudo or, like, we live in public type shit where you're just like, no, all the wrong impulses are being acted on here. You can understand the basic impulse to be like, I'm having this disagreement with my significant other. If only I could have some kind of objective judgment come down from the universe. But like, you don't do that.
It depends what the disagreement is, you know? Like, I someone else I know on the internet had a post about, like, my husband thinks that you should wash lemons before you use them. Like, he's crazy, right? You know, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. You can put that up for a poll.
Sure.
But being like, my boyfriend thing, like, just like getting into too much detail, you're just like, oh, I'm going to read this, but also it's not good for you. Well,
do you wash lemons?
No.
I wash lemons.
Do you?
It depends on my mood. I'll say,
it depends on the application.
This is Katie Natopoulos, who's also an internet legend. And I thought it was really funny because I was like, I've never washed a lemon. I think her husband was like, you have to wash lemons. And she was like, no, you're crazy.
Well, this is a slippery slope because I just saw a video today on Facebook. Sorry, guys. I saw a video on Facebook and now I'm going to tell you about it. And it was like, are you washing your produce all wrong? If you just rinse it with water, all those pesticides.
Because it was telling you a vegetable wash?
No, it was telling you that to get off pesticides, you had to soak your produce in water with baking soda for 12 minutes. And I'm pretty like, is this fake? It must be fake. But people were sharing it like, okay, guys. And then you just see these big bowls of water and baking soda with like lettuce in them. It's like, you're going to eat baking soda lettuce.
Life is too short, y'all. It's too short for this.
Live dangerously. Just don't wash it.
I mean, I think, too, it's like there was a time when we were all on the internet a lot, but people weren't being necessarily out about the fact that they were spending all of their time on the internet because it was like you wanted to create the illusion that you had a cool life.
You had other things to do. Thank God we're past that.
Just kidding. We're all just online all the time. And it was like people like Julia Allison who are like, I'm putting myself out for your consumption. My life is an open book. Tell me everything you think about me. And then people would be like, you're a dumb bitch. And she'd be like, not that. Don't say that. I don't want to hear that. Which, you know,
it's very Elon.
Nobody wants to hear that.
Well, the thing about forcing your way into being an it girl is so, like, I'm of two minds of it because out of the idea that if you're going to be an it girl, you have to be chosen by somebody else. You have to be like submissive in that way and let somebody else like foist fame upon you or something.
Well, also, they're all like born rich is the secret. Yeah. And I think Julia Allison was like, I'm rich. Why can't I be an it girl? I'll come to New York and I'll wear Chanel and then like attention will just follow. And it's like, no, there's a million people just like you who also think that. And it's not Sex and the City that made you think that you would get all these things. Like, that's some bullshit American dream stuff that you just were like, okay, well, I'm a rich, like, pretty girl, so I'm gonna get, like, a house and a family and, like, a hot husband. And then being like, where is he? I want him.
Yeah.
And it's Sex and the City's fault. And it's also, like, that's not what happens on Sex and the City, really. Like,
no.
Yeah.
Sex and the City is kind of, like, depressing, and then at a certain point they took it into like fantasy mode because they were like, this is too depressing.
Yeah,
because there was that, like, a, you know, early on, like, Sarah Jessica Parker was like, I think Carrie's an alcoholic. And then they were like, oh, okay, this has become like a fantasy aspirational thing for people.
Right.
they can't
have real problems unless it's Samantha, and then we'll give her cancer.
Yeah. Which is why she's the only
good one.
The only good one. Yeah.
I have to say that for me, the most depressing thing about the Julia Allison op-ed was that if you leave the internet for all intents and purposes, as she claims to have done, she says she posts occasionally on Instagram, but
she's
is
like,
otherwise
not there.
I never
look at the internet, especially Instagram.
If you do that, then you're offered the opportunity to come back as kind of like a version of the man who knew too little, you know, who like lived in upstate New York and didn't read any news after the election.
Oh, that's what I was thinking about too. Yeah, just like you stay in the bubble.
Well, I was like, I saw her picture and I was like, okay, come on, girl, come back and be like, so I quit the internet and I have spent some time reflecting on the fact that, you know, I made a huge ass out of myself and also had to weather being kind of bullied and it was bullshit. And then I left and now I'm like so happy and here's what I've been up to and here's like a lesson from me, which I would have probably been like, fair, I'll listen to you. But instead
it's a list
she was
of grievances.
Like, right. Instead, she's like, hey, I'm the exact same person and I haven't evolved at all. And I'm just writing something that I totally could have written like 8 years ago.
Yeah, and also, it's like she couldn't scam her way into New York, but she scammed her way into Silicon Valley. Yeah. And now she gets paid to like speak at seminars, which is like the biggest scam of all. Like,
such a good job.
Yeah.
Hire us to speak at your
seminar.
She was no
like,
joke.
Now I'm like a change activist. Oh, and it was like, what is that?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
The irony.
Because I remember she quit the internet after like going to Burning Man. She was like, I went to Burning Man and like
opened
learned, you
my
know,
third eye.
Nothing. I don't know. There's something about like people who have revelations and then learn nothing from it is like a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
To bring it back to Kanye for a minute again, you're like, how can you be self-aware and then be like not self-aware at all, you know? Or like, how are you trying to like acknowledge the, you know, your critics in a way that's like, yeah they've got some points, but also fuck them all. They know nothing.
It's like kind of to a lesser degree like Katy Perry's whole last album cycle too, which was very like I'm gonna listen to my critics, but like in a very kind of cosmetic way. Or like,
but
I
appreciated her for like getting out, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I watched that whole Katy Perry live stream, which was amazing.
Oh, wait, you guys, by any chance, did either of you see that they were broadcasting Fleetwood Mac's The Dance on PBS last night?
No.
Oh, see, that was like another thing where I was like, oh, okay, they've figured out that like, we need this nostalgia so badly. I mean, even thinking about Katy Perry and like, the Aughties when we were first
That's
introduced to
they were playing Hot Aughties. And Cold in the store yesterday, and I was like, my God, this is like,
wait, what store?
This is like
I was in a store.
A ragtime jam or something. Like,
yeah, totally. This is from a million years ago. I think that's the thing. That's what's dangerous about nostalgia is like anything that you're no longer in it can become crystallized into like, oh, that was nice. But then you're like, no, it's fucking terrible. Like, the 2000s were terrible. It just didn't occur to me that things would get worse.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much worse now. Any other time
there's so much worse now.
Our lives
was like,
better.
This is so bad, things will have to get better. And it was like, no, no.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
If you're a fan of Night Call, you might love true crime. If so, let me tell you about a new podcast we love. When you think of a criminal, what do you picture? Do you picture a murderer? A gangster? A thief? Do you picture a woman? Probably not. That's why I'm hooked on the new podcast, Female Criminals. Every week, the hosts of Female Criminals take a psychological approach to analyzing the stories and motivations of the women behind some of the world's most dangerous crimes. Each episode analyzes the psychology of these criminals, looking into their minds to better understand their motives. The hosts dive deep into the lives of infamous female criminals, providing listeners with each woman's backstory and details of her crimes. You can check out episodes on The Cocaine Godmother now. And with a new episode coming out every Wednesday, you can expect episodes on Eileen Wuornos, Mata Hari, and many more. Visit Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts and search for Female Criminals. Again, that's FemaleCriminals. Or visit Parcast.com/criminals to start listening now. That's Parcast, Parcast.com/criminals to listen now.
One more thing, speaking of horror and ladies, there was a post by the director Anna Biller, who made The Love Witch, which we are all fans of, did a series of tweets a few weeks ago about horror and misogyny, and was talking about the trope of final girls in horror, which is the trope whereby there's like a group of girls.
Or a group of guys and girls.
A group of horny teens, usually, that are killed off one by one, and then one girl remains, and it's because she's smarter and better than everybody
and
else.
Tougher.
And didn't try to have sex.
And she's a strong female character. Mm-hmm. And Anna Biller was like, this is bullshit. Strong female characters, like, that's not what that is. And it's become such a thing in horror, especially with, like, male directors, where it's like, yeah, you know, this is feminist because, like, one woman survives. And
I love to show strong women after showing a bunch of other women getting slaughtered.
That's what she was saying. She was like, it excuses people morally from having to think about why they enjoy watching a bunch of other women get killed first for, like, cinematic pleasure. And she was like, this is, like, the basis of, like, all modern horror and, like, grindhouse movies. It's like the rape revenge movie, but then you, like, see the person get raped, usually, you know, where it's like, you do the thing in order to excuse the other thing. And she was like, this sucks. And then dudes just went off on her on Twitter for like many days, really proving her point by being like, wrong.
I didn't see so much of the response. I mean, I saw like a couple of blog posts that were just about like what she wrote, and I listened to a different podcast where they were talking about it. But I mean, it's kind of part of this larger argument that she has just about like what actually constitutes feminist film or like feminist oriented film. And it's not usually the thing that's being called a feminist film. And also the title feminist film usually doesn't mean anything, especially when you're talking about a film directed by a man. Like the most, like a film can really only be feminist in like a meta sense as far as like how it's being made and whose point of view is being prioritized.
Right, and which is why that Brian De Palma movie about Harvey Weinstein that he just announced he's making.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Maybe not something that I'm like expecting a lot from.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's hard because I love Carrie, and yeah, I think it's a very feminist horror movie.
Yes.
I also am like, well, I mean, it's better than not doing anything, I guess, but it's really hard when you hear a man, a white man in their 70s, be like, you know, I really want to show a woman's perspective. It's like, well,
A woman
yeah, might be able to do that pretty effectively.
A movie that a woman makes.
Yeah. I'm doing this interesting
like, well,
experiment.
Why can't men have opinions about this? Like, you can have opinions. You just also have 50 million movies made by men about this,
yeah,
and maybe a couple. Because Anna Biller is also saying like she's making a Bluebeard movie. Mm-hmm. We're all big fans of the Bluebeard, but that's, you know, that's why men would like some men that would like robots to just replace women, because then you don't have to feel bad about putting them in the junk room.
It's a horror movie, so you have to be able to show the horror. I get that.
Right, but she was just saying, like, horror's become so narrow that, like, nothing has advanced in the genre. Even, like, the meta thing, meta critiques of Final Girl genre,
right,
kind of just, like, reinforce, you know,
yeah,
this one girl is better than all the other girls.
Right.
And, like,
I think the thing that's, like, more egregious to me is, like, sure, you can have that structure, but, like, when you can feel the film is trying to be, like, look, girl power, after
yeah,
watching, you know, usually the same girl, even the girl who prevails in the end, getting brutalized throughout, it just feels like I'd rather just have the straight version of that instead of you trying to pose it as being some kind of political statement, which it obviously, if it is at all, it's very lacking in the actual feminist department. Like, I feel like there's some quote, maybe it's like an Antonioni quote or something like that, that I saw recently. It's just like films really aren't, like, I mean, yes, there's like political documentaries and stuff like that, and there's like more didactic narratives. But in general, films are more are emotional and not political. I feel like the politics have to be in how it's made, because if you start trying to say like this is a feminist horror film or something, then you're trying to teach or something through the film, and that's ultimately not what I want from the movies, especially like it's not what I want from movies made by women. Like, I want women to be able to explore all sorts of like crazy, horrific nightmare scenarios and like all like unleash their, you know, darkest nightmares on the screen in the same way that guys have gotten to. And like, I think that that is inherently feminist because you've prioritized their voice. It doesn't mean the film itself, the text of the film, is feminist necessarily, you know, like,
yeah, it's not feminist just by virtue of like having women in it,
yeah,
you know, which is I think what a lot
that's
of people
what happens, yeah,
defending
yeah,
this kind of horror, like, oh, but like it stars some girls and it's like, yeah, yeah, and they all get slaughtered except for one,
yeah,
and then she's like haunted.
Like, you can be a woman who likes something that has girls in it or has women in it, like a story. And that doesn't also make that a feminist story. Like, I think that people just have a limited vocabulary in how to talk about these things because, honestly, we don't get that many of them to talk about.
That's what I'm saying. And I think, like, some of the things that have become, like, feminist films, my mom's friend, Ruby Rich, who's a really great film critic, scholar, mm-hmm, wrote a book called Chick Flicks that talks about just, like, Russ Meyer movies, how Russ Meyer movies, like, feminists love them,
yeah,
because they're all about, like, groups of women. And
mm-hmm,
most of them don't involve those women getting cut, you know, killed off. It's like they're incidentally about a group of, like, female characters that are really interesting, even though they're just meant to be, like, sexploitation movies.
Yeah,
they're,
right,
like, are better than most movies that have female characters because
yeah,
they treat the female characters as people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Annabella talks about, like, Russ Meyer movies in this longer essay that she has on her website, kind of, you know, being like, yeah, those are fun. You can enjoy them and enjoy them apart from them being feminist or whatever. You can enjoy them because it's fun to watch these characters, like, do silly shit or whatever, you know, like, or have revenge on guys or whatever, like, just because they're killing
right,
a man doesn't make it feminist, you know.
No, and it's like they pass the Bechdel test, like, incidentally, you know? But
yeah, that's the thing also. Like, I'm glad that we're kind of past that, but that used to be a huge thing of like, well, it passes the Bechdel test, it must be feminist. I mean, like, and people, you know, I feel like there's a lot of discussion around this with, like, Wonder Woman, too, because, you know, that's obviously a superhero woman about a female superhero directed by a woman. But I wouldn't necessarily call it feminist exactly. Like, it's still about, like, warmongering.
No, I thought it was anti-war. That's why I liked it.
Oh, man.
Because I thought it was an anti-war war movie, and also I liked that it was World War One, because World War One is really underdone.
I hate World War One so much. Oh, it's like my least favorite cinematic war.
What are you talking about? Like, come on, the barracks, no, the bunkers.
I hate the barracks. I hate all the mud. Like, I hate trench foot.
Trench warfare is so, I'm just saying, like, there are way too many World War II movies and way too many Vietnam movies and, like, no World War I movies, and it's such an interesting war. I also thought, I mean, the thing to me, I liked Wonder Woman. I'm not a superhero movie person.
I know, I liked it fine. I didn't think it was feminist. That's what I'm saying. No. It's like, I liked it okay, well, but it's, like, not a feminist movie to me.
I think what made it, the thing that I thought made it feel feminist as opposed to other superhero movies was just, like, the lack of jiggliness in it compared to, like, every other version of Wonder Woman I've ever seen. I was like, this woman is outfitted for battle, and we never saw her cleavage on display in the way that you do in any other superhero movie, which bring just, like, the comic book character costumes that are always, like, you know, have the tit window.
Yeah. Or this just, like the camera, like, leering up the body or whatever.
Right. There was none of that. And I was just like, I'm so unused to that that I noticed it constantly during that movie, because I was like, oh, my God, a woman made this movie.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
And, like, the one really leering shot was, like, Chris Pine's ass. Yeah. You know what I mean? Where I was just like, oh, what if women were in charge of everything? Yeah. It would be different. I don't know. I think you're right, though, too, that, like, the solution is not, like, more tentpole movies, but, like, with a lady's touch. It's, like, more weird indie movies that are specific.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about Wonder Woman is, like, I think not that she ultimately decides to fight in World War One, but that, like, she her whole point of being is, like, I want to promote the causes of love and beauty, which is basically like Sailor Moon's catchphrase. Like, which is not a thing that you usually hear superheroes say. But then she uses that same philosophy to, like, go fight in World War One. So I don't know.
She doesn't fight, though. She crosses the battlefield. She's like, everybody stop fighting. This is stupid. Why is war? I related to Wonder Woman because she's like an alien who's like, I don't know what sexism is. Yeah. So I just don't know that it, like, if I encounter it, I'm just like, huh?
Yeah.
Which is how I went through life until, like, probably, like, 21. It was just like, none of this applies to me because I come from the Amazon.
Yeah.
You know? And then the world beats you down. But it was very, I don't know. I think I was also, just when I saw that movie, I was like crying because I was like, a woman got to make $100 million.
Well, and there were all these little girls in the screening that I was in who were so stoked, and I was like teary just looking at them because I was like, this has to, like, be so fun for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, like, good that we have things now like Wonder Woman and Black Panther, and it's like stupid that it took so long to get them, because like the whole point I thought always of comic books was like these inclusive universes where like everybody has powers that are special, and then they just kept making the same kind of Batman boring man pain movie over and over again.
Okay, so I just want to say though, like, I'm a big fan of Batman, and I take offense at that.
Batman is a millionaire who works for the cops. He sucks,
and that's exactly why he's an anti-hero. I was always very drawn to Batman. I'm just standing for Batman really briefly. There's nothing feminist about Batman, but I like
it. I only like Batman because he was rich and goth. I didn't, the cop thing I never connected for me, but I liked that he was like a rich man who was a goth, kind of.
I liked that he had a very, like, violent beginning. Like, his parents were brutally murdered. I was just like, okay, this sounds pretty good. This is a fascinating movie for grown-ups that here I am watching. It's clearly not made for children at all.
Y'all got tricked. The only good Batman movies are the Tim Burton Batman movies.
I love the Tim Burton Batman movies. If a woman made a Batman movie that objectified Batman so that he was, like, just super hot, and
what
it was
if it
just
was a Catwoman.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not interested in Catwoman. I'm oversaturated with cats by now.
What if Catwoman made the movie?
Okay.
Speaking of horror that seemingly objectifies men and is weird, Emily, you saw Upgrade. Blumhouse? Is that how you say Blumhouse?
It's Blumhouse? A Blumhouse production, a but it's a Blumhouse. BH Tilt, which is their like micro budget sub shingle.
Well, I was really stoked about that because you wrote a really great rave review of Upgrade for New York Magazine, just being like, hey, this movie was fun.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about it and expected nothing, and then it was great. And then a bunch of people I know went out and saw it because of your review.
Oh, that's great.
And I thought, yeah, I was like, this is great. Also, I love the idea of like critics doing what you really would like them to do, which is like pointing out movies that would otherwise maybe not, you know, hit because
yeah.
people are so inoculated.
I wish that was most of the job, because that's the most fun thing is when you feel like you have a cause and you can be like, go do this now. Go see this movie.
Well,
Most of the time it's not that. I also reviewed Adrift this week, which I did not even bother putting on social media, but yeah.
I mean, I've heard you complain just in general about like tent poles and sort of like the ways also now in which critics are like sort of bribed to not give tent poles bad reviews, you know?
I don't think the critics are bribed not to.
Not bribed, but like that you can only come to the premiere if you're giving it a good review or whatever.
Right. I think that more in a more egregious way, like you saw what happened with like LA Times, giving them a bad review for, I forget what movie that was at that point. It was some, I think it was Last Jedi, maybe. I can't remember, honestly. But not getting invited to the premiere because LA Times had done a big investigative report on Disneyland and like how much it's paying its employees and everything. And they kind of got this blowback in the form of not being invited to this premiere. There's like a whole long a discussion to be had about access-oriented journalism. I mean, there's a reason that like...
And that was crazy because that was like, it also wasn't like you gave a Star Wars movie a bad review, so you're banned. It was like, you talked about how like custodians at Disneyland are dying in their cars because they underpaid and overworked. And that's what they don't want you to report on.
They like, don't care what you think about. It doesn't affect their bottom line if somebody from LA Times, no offense to Justin Chang, who I like a lot, but like, his review of like the Infinity War movie or whatever isn't going to really massively affect.
Well, this idea that like those movies are too big to fail, obviously, like with Solo not doing as well as they wanted it to, is like, I don't know. I wonder if there will be pushback on that of like, no, these movies are just going to come out and you're going to eat it because that's what's for dinner.
Well, people didn't eat Solo. It did not do that well, which is interesting. Like, it feels like even Star Wars doesn't have the power of Marvel at this point. But
right. Well, it's also like I saw a couple of people being like, oh, movies starring white men. Like, guess we better not make any of those anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Totally. Like, what if that's how the coverage was? Like, it is for other things.
But
you know?
But Upgrade is fun just because it does feel like a kind of thing that doesn't get made anymore. First of all, it's like super gross in like a very Carpenter-y way that I really appreciate. I mean, it's made by Lee Wannell. I don't know how you say his last name, but he's like the guy who like he co-created the Saw movies, which I don't care for. But like he obviously has a great love of like on-screen viscera. But I think in the context of a kind of sci-fi gross out all semi slapstick movie, it's really fun. The premise is that this guy becomes a quadriplegic in this accident. He gets like hijacked by these like nefarious like cyborg dudes and becomes a quadriplegic. But then a like Zuckerbergian teenage like tech mogul does some experimental surgery on him that like reconnects his brain with his nervous system so that he can walk again. But the thing that reconnects it is like an AI that also talks to him in his mind and can like also do autopilot on his body if he wants and just take over for him and like do insane martial arts.
That sounds awesome.
It's great.
Yeah, I mean, that also sounds like what I want horror to be is like a commentary on now.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, which is what I feel like what Anna Biller was really saying was like, these genre tropes are like not fresh anymore. Like anything you think you're doing with Final Girls has been done, you know?
Yeah.
Like when the Scream movies, which are like great movies that I love, like, okay, like she has sex and she lives. Mm-hmm. That's like the last time I can think of somebody doing something
radical,
original with
it.
And what I liked about the Scream movies too is that like as they go on, Sydney like doesn't get more badass. She gets like more and more traumatized and freaked out.
Yeah.
And with the third one, she's like living off the grid and is like, no one can be in my life because they'll get murdered.
Yeah.
So it's just me and my dog.
That's like the one good thing about the Insidious movies. I think those movies are super boring otherwise. First of all, I like that one of the main carryover heroines of them is like an elderly woman. That doesn't happen very often. And that she's also like, you know, it's about her getting increasingly just like freaked out from all of her ghost experiences. And like,
oh, is that what Insidious is? Which ones are the found footage ones?
That's Paranormal Activity.
I get all of these confused. And The Conjuring is the haunted dolls.
Conjuring is like Conjuring and the Annabelle movies are related. Yeah. I'm realizing in our discussions about haunted dolls, it might not do anything for me. I might just like dolls.
You're immune.
I might be the haunted doll.
Then we'd be night doll.
Speaking of night dolls, you can give us a night doll at 240-46-NIGHT or send us a text message to that same number or send us an email to
nightcallpodcast@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on our socials. Hit us up on the socials. We're on Twitter at Night Call Pod, Instagram at Night Call Podcast. We are on Facebook at Night Call Podcast.
Guys, thanks for listening.
We'll see y'all next week.
Yeah, go see Upgrade.
Yeah.
We'll see what happened to Melania by the time this comes out. What if Melania is a haunted doll? That would not surprise me one bit.
That feels like the most credible story. And
you cracked it. We predicted it here first, even though by the time you hear this, it will have already been confirmed. And no wonder did anyone predict this. Well, we did.
We did.
Mark the time.
From the past.
See you next week.